The Game Schooler Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, is a weekly audio show that highlights the educational value of tabletop gaming. In this week's episode, we'll cover New York Slice, our recommended game of the week, discuss board game awards in the School of Gaming, and wrap it up with the high five bang for your buck games. Welcome to the Game Schooler Podcast. I am your host, Doug Kotecki, along with my co-host, the esteemed Dr. Sir Dr. Michael McCabe.
What's it? I'm not a sir yet. I'll take the doctor, though. We have so much to talk about, Doug.
It's going to be a full episode, folks, so buckle up. If you're driving for the holiday season, this is
a great episode.
Drivers rejoice. Let's say that. All right. What's new, Michael?
Well, where would you like me to start?
Anywhere you want. Have you played anything this week?
Just one.
Okay.
And I have a tie-in. I don't quite know where this is going to go, but starting 2 years ago, so in 2019, I buy one board game a year for the family and call it a family game and present it on Christmas. And Just One was that game, and we love playing it. How about you?
No, everything has been geared towards getting ready for Christmas.
Yep.
So there has not been time for gaming. There's been holiday parties. There's been, you name it, everything except for gaming. I have acquired nothing.
Ask me if I got any new games.
My wallet celebrates.
Did you get any new games? Doug, I got home from basketball practice today. I need to clear my throat. Excuse me. There was a gigantic box from Game Nerds. There was also a little box on top of it from Fun Again Logistics, which is typically like a Kickstarter. So all six games from Game Nerds, they don't sponsor us yet, but they arrived on time just like Andrew told me they would. So excited. So all the gifts are here for everybody. No shocker there.
But hold on. They didn't send it in a bag like Amazon
does?
No,
not in a bag, not in an envelope. You would not believe. And then I brought props. Look at what arrived. This is a Kickstarter, folks, called Dungeon Party that was supposed to arrive in October of 2020. This was supposed to be a Christmas present for my daughter in 2020.
But it was supposed to arrive in 2020?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to look this up.
So it just solidified. I'm pretty certain about that one. I've looked it up a few times. I'm done with Kickstarters, and I'm only buying my games at Game Nerds.
Okay. Because you don't like the wait?
Because I like to get the games when I buy them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's definitely a delay in excitement. There's sometimes I'm really excited to back a game, and then it shows up, and I'm like, why was I excited about this again?
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that really kind of gets me is if I know I'm going to like it because I've played, like, a different version of it, you know, like the Dice Throne. There's a Marvel Dice Throne Kickstarter, and it's like, I already like the game. I know I'm going to like it. And in that case, it's like, I don't want to miss out on any special promos or upgraded components or things like that they have.
Yeah.
And definitely get that FOMO type of thing. But
fear of missing out?
Yeah, I FOMO? Think that's what that okay. means. Yeah.
I was just really impressed. Six boxes all delivered and packaged nicely. All the family Christmas presents are there. So very excited about that. After the podcast tonight, I will be wrapping them. Some of the gifts are to myself.
Okay.
Like Dune Imperium and Cape May.
Estimated delivery of September 2020. That was their target date.
To be delivered.
Yep. And it doesn't say when it funded. Oh, wait. Let me see.
Yeah, we can move on from that. I
just think that's funny when those things happen. Oh, it's probably in the updates.
Another thing that did arrive this week is the December-January edition of Educational Leadership. I will gladly leave it with you if you would like to read it, Doug.
I don't know how to read, actually.
But the topic is engage and motivate. And I don't know if you've heard about this little thing called a teacher shortage across the United States of America.
That I have heard of.
But let's talk about a toolbox for engagement, a toolbox for critical thinking. Basically, a couple of big takeaways from the most recent publication of, what am I trying to say here? Use words. Educational leadership is that kids aren't just going to show up and do work. You've got to get the youth engaged. And I thought, game schooler, work board games into your toolbox. But there's just a lot out there. I've got a couple statistics for you.
Okay? First of all, as a parent, I can attest that kids will just not do what you want them to.
Correct.
but no matter how nicely you ask, that sometimes does not matter.
Previously in the school setting, oftentimes they would. All right. So 48% of teachers who said their students were a lot less motivated during the pandemic versus 18% of percentage of students who said they were a lot less motivated during the pandemic. So this perception.
So teachers thought that they were more engaged than what the students are actually thinking that they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the other one is just morale. This is the one that kind of broke my heart a little bit. 82% that's not written very well, of teachers who said...
From an educational magazine? That makes sense.
Shocker. Who said their students' morale in school was lower than before the pandemic. So that number is huge. 82% of teachers who said their students' morale in school was lower now than before the pandemic. And 38% of students said their morale in school was lower than before the pandemic.
But to be fair... I feel like I could have guessed that without doing a poll, that during the pandemic, kids would be way less engaged based on all of the other things that are swirling around in the ether.
Yeah, I think that's because you're brilliant. A couple other big takeaways from this, though, are that there's no longer just one magical thing for school. School has become very, very complex. Teaching and learning, there's a lot that's put on teachers. And I think, you know, one thing that we've talked about often is bringing board games to the table brings engaged people to the table. And so that's just my little shout out and plug. When I read this week, I thought, man, we should try to get some gameschooler.com podcast into educational leadership here.
Well, I think even when I was graduating, you know, getting towards the end of high school was only when they started talking about people learning differently.
Yeah, differentiated instruction.
You know, it wasn't even, and I was getting out of education at that point. And that was just starting. I was like, oh, some people are visual learners. Like,
yeah.
That wasn't even a concept when I was in grade school. Now, like you said, everything needs to be specialized and hitting your kids in all different directions with materials that are engaging to them.
Yep.
It's very fascinating.
And if anyone does get this publication, The Future of Learning Lies in Engagement by Andy Hargreaves is just an outstanding article talking about what are the pathways forward, what are the trails, how are we going to bring the excitement of school and learning back and make it sustainable as well. So anyways.
All right. The other thing I wanted to bring up is we found out that the Dice Tower podcast is coming to an end.
Sad face.
But the Dice Tower Network will still be functioning, which we are still on.
Happy face.
It sounds like they're doing some sort of new venture, but it will not be the Dice Tower as we know it. And the Dice Tower has been a very big, critical part of my gaming experience.
Well, mine too. I've only been in the hobby for 3 years here, and they've been there every single week.
I mean, when I first got into the hobby, which was 10, 11 years ago, and I listened to, and I've been listening to their podcast ever since. And even when I started going into their back catalog, and at that point, it wasn't as much as it is now. What, 52, that's 520 episodes, you know, of 10 years.
Yeah.
Essentially. So, and if they're at 750, there's only about 200 to go through.
Right.
And I could cherry, and I don't even think they were all online at that point. But, I mean, that's something that I'm going to personally miss. Just great family-friendly content in the discussion of board games. And I always thought that Tom Vassell did a great job of...
Does. Present tense.
Yeah, yeah. And the you and I talked about this off-air, but the idea of the audio podcast, and I'm in the car, I am exercising once a month, and and you know, the just being able to listen to stuff instead of always watching it. I know they probably do better on their videos,
yeah,
viewer wise and stuff like that. But
well, podcasting takes time,
yeah,
and you have to have, you know, I thought Tom did an excellent job of talking about the creative energy that is necessary for the podcast. It got me to think about our project here with the Game Schooler podcast.
And we're like, just phoning it in.
We're 1/15 of the way from what he is. You know, we're 1 year into this with this episode, and he's been doing it for 15 years. And like we also talked about off air, Tom just seems like a really good dude. Like somebody you could sit down and play board games with. And I really enjoy listening to the Dice Tower, Mandy and Suzanne, Tom and Eric, to find out, you know, what games should I play before bringing into my collection.
Well, and he's always been very welcoming in the idea of there are things that he does not like playing, games that he does not like, and I've always got the impression it's like, it's okay for somebody else to like that game.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a bad thing, which I think is something as gamers that sometimes isn't always the case, where people look down at, oh, you play Connect Four, that's such a childish game. And it's like, no, you're playing with the family. Who cares? Like, however you're having fun and playing games, you can like what you like, I like what I like, no big deal. Like,
yeah.
There's no...
Is that your monthly exercise in the car, playing Connect Four?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, while driving. Yeah, I've got four set up on a dashboard. It's a solo thing. It's kind of complicated. But so I just wanted to, you know, send out our appreciation for what they've done and what Tom has done for what will be 750 episodes, which is
unbelievable.
Yeah, quite an effort. So we appreciate that. Anything else?
No. Did you want to know any of the six games that I procured, or no? Have we talked enough?
No, you can tell people. Would you like to announce that to our listeners?
Sure. For the family this year, for 2021 Christmas, I got Pictures, which is a tie-in later on in our School of Gaming when we talk about awards, because it's an award-winning game. And then I picked up for myself, I picked up Role Player and Cartographers as gifts to me, because why not? And then
'tis the season.
It is. I got Micro Macro Crime City. Little did I know that you would also bought Micro Macro Crime City, an extra copy for me, but moving forward. And then Dune Imperium. So adding that big, heavy one. I just got tired of hearing people talk about it and talk about how awesome it is. And so I splurged.
All right. Well, hey, yeah, that's what you got to do. I put in a pre-order for Ark Nova based on hype today. So we'll see. We'll see how that turns out.
Good.
Which is Ark Nova is a heavy, complicated game about running a modern-day zoo.
I actually did put in a pre-order for that recently, too, just based on Tom Vassell's recommendation.
All right. And before we head out to the recommended game of the week, just want to remind anybody to contact us with questions, comments, anything. Reach out, email at gameschooler.com. We also have a contact form on our website, gameschooler.com, if you want to touch base with us. So with that, let's move on to the recommended game of the week.
The recommended game of the week.
Wow. Anger. Keep it going.
Just trying something new. The recommended game of the week is a family-friendly game we think you should add to your collection, and it passes our stringent criteria for quality and content. This week's game is New York Slice by Bezier Games.
Published in 2017, the designer is Jeffrey D. Ahlers. Art by Stephanie Gustafson and John Kaufman. 2-6 players, 30 minutes, ages 8 and up, and was a 2017 Mensa recommended.
Congratulations, Doug.
Yeah, do what I can. I'm putting an extra vote for him. In New York Slice, each player slices pizzas into portions, giving their opponents first choice while they take the leftovers. There are a dozen kinds of pizza to work with, from veggie to Hawaiian to meat lovers, and each player decides if they want to eat or keep some of the slices, building the best collection of pizzas possible. Each time a player slices a pizza, there's a different special to go along with it, whether it's allocated to one of the portions or placed on its own. Specials provide the player with special powers or points. Some slices have anchovies on them, which are worth negative points to anyone who collects them, but anchovies might show up on different pizza types you're collecting. So in order to have the majority of a type, you just might have to collect ones with anchovies on it. If you tie another player, well, that's irrelevant. And some slices have pepperoni on them, which if you eat them, which is basically turning them over face down, you get points for each pepperoni that is on the pizza. What am I missing?
The description's good. Let's just talk about the basic mechanics of the game. It's an I pick, you choose, or no, it's an I split, you choose game. So let's just talk about the actual game and what happens and so why it's awesome.
Yeah, there's different slices of pizza that have numbers on them. So I think like cheese pizza, excluding the pepperoni, a cheese slice is like a number of 11, which means there's 11 slices of cheese in the entire collection of pizzas that you're making. And if you collect a majority of those pieces of cheese, you're going to get 11 points, whoever gets the most of them. There's three maybe of the vegetable. Whoever gets most of those is going to get 3 points. So you're trying to collect sets of numbers that are based on the number of slices that are potentially available for that type of pizza. And then you're either collecting those pieces or eating them.
Yep.
And if you're eating them, you're getting the points from the pepperoni. One of the cool things is that there's like daily specials. So when it's your turn to split, there's a special little placard
that comes.
And it's either a positive one or a negative one. Can kind of go in both directions, and you can, when you're separating the pizza, as you're flipping over the pizza tiles, there's going to be 11 tiles that you flip over. It is going to make a full pizza.
Yeah.
Then the player has to divide it, but they can't reorganize any of the pizza. It's as if you made the pizza that way, and then you separate the slices out into chunks based on the number of players, which I think helps cut down on analysis paralysis.
Yeah. It's quick.
Because you're stuck with what you have, and you can't really manipulate it that much, which is one of the concerns I have of the game, is that analysis paralysis could be a thing as people are trying to split it, but I think they've done a good job of alleviating that or eliminating it, reducing it, just on the way that the design works. These little placards you can put either on its own or you can add it to, so it's like if it's a really junky special ability that maybe isn't going to work out well, maybe you put it with some really good slices of pizza. If it's a really good power, maybe you leave it just by its own and somebody's going to take that, you know? So you're trying to look around and see what people are collecting and, you know, trying to make it worthwhile for yourself.
It is a great game for one, anybody who's ever worked in a pizza shop or is a big fan of pizza shops. The game itself is in a very cool pizza box. Two, anybody who is teaching fractions and multiplication, the game works well with that. The scoring setup at the end, it's like a little pizza menu deal. I guess whether you're teaching to middle school students or... When I first played this game, I thought, man, I wish I would have had this in my high school special ed classroom, because teaching students whose skills are severely lagging in multiplication and division, the workbooks, Doug, they're terrible. You know what I mean? Like, even a lot of the computer-based math, it's really bad. Kids don't feel good doing it. And this game, with the pizza slices and how everything fits together, I think can be brought in all the way up to that high school level. So there's just such a wide range, you know, from 8, 9, 10-year-olds all the way up.
Yeah, one of the things I love about this game is the production is awesome.
Yeah.
Michael alluded to it a little bit, but the game box is designed and opens like a pizza box, but it's not like a cheap pizza box quality. It's a nice board game box that opens like a pizza box. The score sheet looks like an order ticket. Like when the waitress comes to your table or the waiter and he's filling out the ticket.
Yep. I love
that's
that.
That's what the score sheet looks like. The rules look like a menu. They're written out and it looks like a pizza menu. So it's like really immersive. You know, you're talking about engagement earlier.
Yep.
This really puts you in the theme of a pizzeria.
Yeah,
right?
And all the way from the box says it all. Slice, choose, eat. I mean, that's what you do on your turn.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to slice. Somebody's going to choose. Now we eat. And I also like how the set collection is built into it, too.
So. Yeah. And the today's special, those little placards, they really mix up the gameplay because you don't use all of them every game. So there's some variability to that. It mixes it up. It adds a little extra than just splitting the pizzas and the numbers, right? It gives you that extra gameplay.
Remind me again how you win that. How do you win the daily special?
Yeah. Those get put on either a pizza section or left alone.
Okay.
It's something that somebody is going to be drafting.
Yep, okay.
So you can either
In the choose portion of the
correct.
Game, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So I like that. It's easy to teach, very easy to teach, and it's easy to start playing. The setup is very manageable. It's not something that requires a bunch of setup beforehand, and certainly one I think that 30 minutes seems about spot on if you keep everything moving, and certainly setup and takedown, you would definitely be able to get this through in a class.
Oh, absolutely.
Classroom setting. So anything else that you want to highlight before we head on to the skills?
The cost tends to be very reasonable. I know we say we don't talk about costs, and then we usually talk about cost each episode, but this is a game that, since we first played it, was that 6 or 8 months ago already?
Yeah.
When we reviewed it? I've noticed it on sale regularly under $30, but I mean on sale sometimes in the low 20s. So
yeah,
if you're a budget-conscious gamer and if you're looking to add in a game where there's definitely math with social interaction, this is a game that I think you should take a look at.
All right, so moving on to the skills, we think this game has educational value beyond just playing the game. There's skills that can be hard to teach in a regular traditional setting that show up in just playing the game. You don't even need to do anything extra. And we like to highlight 5 of those each week. And I'll start off, the first one that jumped out off the page to me was decision making.
That's what I have too, Doug.
You know,
it's so obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, one of our core skills, a game that allows students to make decisions based on currently and previously available information. You know, this happens. So if you're playing a 4-player game, the person that's splitting the pizza up, they're going to be picking last. So that person has a whole bunch of decisions to make while they're dividing the pizza up. But then everybody's slowly drafting the parts of the pizza that have been divided. So you've got choices to make every turn of, that's kind of a bad special, but it's got good pizza, or these are really good. I'm going to try and get this. You know, there's a little bit of a stock market majority area control of like, well, I'd like to get into the 5 game and see if I can collect more 5s. You know, nobody else seems to be dabbling in that. And the pieces that you eat are hidden, so you don't remember.
Yeah.
You know,
should have talked about that at the top end. That's where my short-term working memory is not the greatest. I tend to write a lot of things down, and I've been burned playing this game. It's like, I thought I was collecting 7s. Actually, I only had the 1 7.
Yeah, and like, I think there's a lot of these available, and then there's not because somebody ate them and they're just not face up anymore. So there are a lot of decisions to be made, and they're manageable decisions, which is a big part of game schooling, is decisions that your students and your kids can make for themselves.
Yeah, and where I also saw this skill is, I think, in repeated plays, that sense of processing data to make decisions faster certainly emerges. The more you play this game, the easier it is to select where to cut the pizza, how to cut the pizza, knowing what I'm going to be left with. So I also had that as my top skill.
Yeah, and I put another kind of like a 1A core skill with observation. because I think that when you're dividing the pizza, and we define observation as a game that rewards careful watching with attention to details and behaviors in order to
understand. It's a skill we've talked about very little.
To understand and arrive at a judgment. So you, while you're dividing the pizza, you need to be looking around the table and seeing what your opponents are collecting.
Reading body language.
And how you can entice them to take the portion that you want them to without giving them too much. Yeah. If you're going to give them something that they really want, make sure you throw in the piece with a bunch of anchovies on it so they're taking at least some negative. And so I think you kind of have to – it's a really good thing of looking around the table and seeing what everybody's done. And because most of the information is face up – and it's not a split-second decision, it's a really good tool for observation.
Yeah, I looked right at that skill today and didn't make that connection. That's a good one.
All right, what else do you got?
I have tactical thinking, a game that challenges students to make decisions based on currently available and frequently changing information. If I am splitting the pizza, I may think that I'm setting it up so that I'm going to get what I want. But little do I know that I'm actually going to get the exact opposite because I'm selecting last. So the board moves within, not just on every turn, but within the phases of a turn. Everything is just shifting, and I think you really have to be on your toes. And sometimes it's just knowing when to go after those specials of the day and when to jump in on those and when to pass on those. So
yeah, I've got tactical thinking as well. The next one I got is one that doesn't show up very often, but I think it really fits in this one in a kind of a unique, fun way, and that's patience, a game that helps students remain calm and better tolerate delays. So there's two times that this pops up is, one, while the person is dividing the pizza, you have to wait. But analyzing, it gives you something to do while you're waiting, and you're looking at how they're dividing it, right? And then you're saying, oh, I hope he leaves that like that. I like that configuration. Oh, no, he moved it. He didn't do that. He put it there. And then you may, in a four-player game, maybe you're picking third. And there's one that you really want, and you have to wait for it. And it may not come to you. And so I feel like there's this... there's delays in this game. There are spots where the game slows down.
I feel like you're
down.
Describing resilience. Dear listener, that was Doug who said patience, and I kind of feel like if I would have put that skill out there, you just would have torn me apart. You think you have to be patient in playing New York Slice? The game moves so fast.
I think there are opportunities that it presents it, and I think the game does a really good job of keeping kids engaged while those delays are happening.
Well, especially young gamers. I mean, if you're playing, if you have a savvy 6 or 7 year old, I could see them going along with the family and playing this game. But I don't see patience with older gamers or adult gamers.
No, and probably not. Yeah. I mean, we're not talking about delays. I don't really think of anything above fourth grade being patience being a real strongly needed skill.
Oh, I've developed patience from playing board games. I know.
You know what I mean? So it is for that younger crowd, but I think the engagement of the production and that the way that it's set up, there are delays that because the game does such a good job, I think kids, and maybe it's not patience and it's that the game does a good job of eliminating the need for patience, that there's always something to be looking at even when you're not directly engaged.
Yeah, and that I see that. I have Resilience, a game that teaches students how to quickly recover from and cope with difficulties. And just zooming in on the coping, if I'm a kid and I really want to get this pizza because then I'll have the most of the sevens and I'm gonna get 7 points, and then all of a sudden my sibling takes that seven right before me. I really can't do much about it. I've got to move on and take the next one. So I think you're right there. There is patience there for the younger gamers. I just didn't see it like that. I see that more as I've got to keep moving.
I definitely like Resilience. It's a great skill. And I think it actually feeds into two of the things that you just said, feed into one of my last ones, which is personal responsibility. a game that highlights the cause and effect nature of a student's actions and the related results, which the idea of what you said is you're splitting the pizza and you think that the people are going to take and they may not.
Yeah.
And that's your responsibility. Like, there's nothing, you set that up.
Right.
So you, I don't want to say you have no one to blame but yourself, but it's like, it's you're responsible for that. Your choice on whether
it's like to take that to yourself.
Yeah. It's when you eat that pizza and then you're like, at the end of the game, you're like, I wish I had not eaten that eight because then I would have had majority. It's like those choices, the choices that you're making throughout this game are really important choices. You know, they're not things that you're like,
And the game's pretty balanced as well, right? Like when I played this, there hasn't been runaway victories. I mean, it's fairly close.
No, so because that's once somebody starts getting there, you're
at the end, it's pretty clear.
Yeah, so I think this is one where you can really look back and be like, I miscalculated that that split. You know, it did not turn the way that I wanted it to.
Do you have one more skill?
I do.
Can I guess it?
Sure.
Is it competition?
It is.
Yes. A game that develops healthy competitive habits as two or more parties compete for a goal or reward that isn't shared. I also have competition, Doug.
Yeah.
Not to just load up our podcast with that air, but I think we've asked and answered and have described how the healthy competitive habits are built into the game. I might not get what I want, but I'm always going to get something, and I need to make that work. And sometimes it's just stacking up the pepperonis to get points. And anything else to add to that?
No, I mean, I think it's just the situation of you're very much aware of the pizza slices that are in front of you. And it's almost like this is a game that has a scoreboard kind of. When I think about like basketball or football, you know, major sports that have like the score up there constantly, you are always looking around to see whether you have the most of a particular type of pizza.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you're looking around the table. I'm leading in threes. He's got more fours. Can I get more fours? And that to me is that being consciously aware the entire time that a competition is happening.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point. I think it would be the perfect game. Do you remember the World Series of Poker about 15 years ago when that thing took over ESPN? Wouldn't it be cool to have like on ESPN2 or ESPN Plus the World Series of New York Slice? And so, you know, people can't look back at their pizza, but they have that under the table camera, so everyone at home knows. Don't take the three. Don't take the three. Oh, I took the three. Yeah, it's
you can't win that one. You can't win that.
Yeah, it's a fun competitiveness that's in the game. I have one skill left, and that is risk management, a game in which students must identify, evaluate, and prioritize options to reduce the impact of unfortunate events or risks. And it's not just when slicing the pizza and setting up for others. Sometimes it's in drafting as well. If I'm going first, I have the little game in my head where, well, do I take the threes or did Doug want me to take the threes? So then I'm going to take the sevens. Well, but if I take the sevens, then I'm leaving out the fives and I'm already in the lead by five. So it's just that inner calculation that certainly happens when you cut the pizza, but also in the drafting portion of the game as well.
Sure. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Ton of skills in this one.
Yeah, and not something that you would think in first glance, that's for sure.
I didn't. When you brought this to the table, I was like, how's this a game schooler game? And we played it, and I immediately wanted to play it again, and it passed our stringent criteria for sure.
And a little side note, we do have a subject builder on the history of pizza.
Yep.
That you could.
That was a fun one to make.
Shoehorn right into this this game if you were playing it in a classroom.
Is that out there for free right now?
I don't
think
so.
Or is it behind a paywall?
I think at the moment it's behind a paywall.
We'll make it free for you here in 2022 at some point.
Well, now we just lost sales.
Maybe.
It's really not that expensive, folks. I think it's like $2 or $3, and it talks about the history of pizza and the different styles of pizza, and then some of the famous American pizza franchises.
All I'm going to say, thank you to the state of Michigan. You brought me great different pizza chains that I didn't know about.
So it's a really cool little subject builder that is a great little add-on lesson with this game.
Fifth to eighth grade, I think it'd be fit right in there very nicely.
So that is New York Slice, our recommended game of the week. Let's move on to the School of Gaming.
The School of Gaming. In the School of Gaming, we discuss concepts, keywords, etiquette, and helpful ideas in the world of gaming and education. This week, I have no idea what we'll be talking about, but Doug is going to guide us through board game awards. What's the difference? Question mark.
I'm just, for those of you that just swerved off the road that were listening to the podcast in the car and thought that a Big Mac truck was creeping up behind you, that was just our introduction to the School of Gaming.
A little over the top. I tried to tone it down this week.
Oh, yeah. It was way scaled back. this week, we're going to talk about board game awards. Yep. What's the difference? So there are a lot of awards that come up throughout the year and people talk about. And so I just kind of wanted to go through some of the most popular ones and explain where they get their results and, you know, whether they're valuable to us. So the first one is the big one, which is the Spiel des Jahres, which is basically for German-speaking countries when a game is released in Germany. And a lot of times there's a little bit of a hiccup where a game can come out in the United States and it doesn't get a German release until a year later.
Or vice versa.
And that it shows up on the Spiel des Jahres. So it is the jury that selects these is game critics from German language media.
Sehr gut.
Makes up the jury for this. And they have three awards that they give out each year, which is the game of the year, which usually tends to be like a family style game, a fairly simple and welcoming, approachable game. They have the Kinderspiel des Jahres, which is the kids game of the year. Which comes in handy for those of us with younger kiddo. It's more the young kids games, not just family weight. And then they have the Kennerspiel des Jahres, which is the connoisseur game of the year, which is your heavier game.
Gamer games.
But even those are not super heavy. We're not talking about four-hour brain-melting games are not usually winning that. And they're usually just slightly above family weight games. Am I missing anything on the Spiel des Jahres?
That's you covered the Spiel des Jahres.
That is usually the kind of gold standard. If something gets that Spiel des Jahres, it's going to be selling a bunch of copies.
What about your association like Mensa? We talk about that a lot. Are we going to Mensa tonight, or should I move on and bring us back to Spiel des Jahres? Because I can do that.
No, I didn't look up anything on Mensa, just outside of they usually recommend thinky games.
Yeah.
You know, that have good learning and kind of puzzly type of nature to them.
When I see Spiel des Jahres, the Spiel des Jahres winner, that's a game I'm going to add to my family's collection.
To play.
Yes, and Pictures, the 2020 Spiel des Jahres, that's the game I will be giving to my family for Christmas in 2021 and say, this won the Spiel des Jahres, and they at least know, like, oh, that's a pretty good game.
And it's narrowed down, too, because there is a winner, but there's several. They announce the nominees beforehand, so it's usually one out of three or four games for each of those categories. And pretty much every one of them that they – I rarely hear – it's not like the Oscars where they say, oh, that was a huge oversight. Sorry, Siri, was I interrupting you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't – oh, well, it's telling me, Siri, my watch is telling me about the Grammy Awards. We're not talking about that. Maybe later, but thank you. Appreciate that.
Back to the podcast is regularly scheduled.
So even those, the nominations are usually pretty solid picks, but
yep.
I don't see it as like, oh, this was a, not very often where you're like, well, that should not have won. I know there are some, but by and large, I think the nominated games and the winner are usually pretty good. So the next one that I've got written down is the Origin Awards.
Yeah, tell me about this, Doug.
Which this is, these awards are at the Origins Game Fair every year, and I think they've been doing it for 25 years, maybe. And there's a little bit of controversy with this one and the way that it's been awarded over the years. It has now been is selected by a jury of industry professionals. I don't know who they asked to be on that jury, how that works. At one point, there was kind of fan user voting once nominees were picked. And so there was a lot of things where it was like whatever the most popular game was usually won. And so there was some...
Did you say 25 years?
I think so, yeah.
Their awards go back to 1975.
Okay, well, then their website is horribly out of date. I think... Maybe I just got...
No,
I'm still
going.
Living in the year 2000.
In the year... Yeah, I don't let me take you off track.
No, here. So there's a little bit... I think they're a little bit more on track now, but they give out like a game of the year, the card game of the year, family game, digital adaptation, collectible games, role-playing games. They have an award for a gaming accessory that comes out, miniatures game, historical miniatures, a lot of stuff. That they're giving awards out. So that's a good list. I know the Origins Game Fair, I think, is now put on by Gamma every year. Could be wrong about that, but I think they're the main drivers of that convention. There's also the Golden Geek Awards, which those are entirely user voted by Board Game Geek users. And those, I think, turn out pretty well. Most of the time, I think that's a pretty solid crop of games.
Yeah, that's another sticker I look for on a game box. If I see that and I'm in a store, that gets my attention.
Yep. And then there is the Dice Tower, which Tom Vassell's got a committee of, I think, about 40 to 80 people that he has vote on his. And they have several categories like new publisher and small publisher. Game of the year, family game, expansion of the year, all that type of stuff. So there are a lot of awards out there. Are there any, I mean, you mentioned the Spiel des Jahres and the Golden Geek. How important do you gravitate to these and how important are they to you?
That's a good, they get my attention. The Dice Tower recommended seal was a big one for me when I was first starting to put together a collection.
Uh-huh.
I didn't quite understand what the heck the Spiel des Jahres was until about 6 months into doing this podcast. but the Dice Tower recommended seal of approval, and I'm sure I'm butchering that now, was one that in listening to the podcast and seeing that those different games in Target and places like that, I would have confidence in selecting that game. Now, though, if it says Spiel des Jahres winner, that's one that I look to get because I'm based on the last two that I've picked. And if Azul wasn't a Spiel des Jahres winner, I apologize. I could be wrong on that. But I'm pretty sure just one was. Bringing those games into my house, it just adds something new to my family's gaming experience. So that's a very long answer to nowhere. But I kind of do. I kind of don't. I certainly pay attention to the Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah. I think for me, as much as I love hunting down a hidden gem that people don't know about, when there's 2,000 to 3,000 board games coming out every year,
yeah,
and you're trying to figure out which ones are going to fit in your family or your game group, and to me, predominantly we're playing family weight games. I gravitate towards those because they're the mass, the mass public is picking out which of these games they like, and there's a little bit of a shorthand. It's like, well, if all of these people are saying it's good, and most of these are being voted on by industry professionals, people that know their way around games.
Yeah,
it's not the church group picking out their favorite games of the year and Monopoly wins every year. That type of thing. That there's that thing of like, okay, that's one I need to pay extra attention to.
Yeah.
It may not come into my collection, but it certainly stand up and take note which games are winning game of the year, which ones are winning family game of the year.
So two other things I do pay attention to with the Spiel des Jahres. When I see that sticker and see winner And I did look it up while you were talking. I should have been listening. I'm sorry. But Just One was 2019. Azul was 2018 winner. In my mind, the game is going to be available. And I can recommend this game to educators, to friends, to people who are just getting into the hobby, to people who ask, hey, so you got this board game podcast, so is that like Monopoly? Well, it is like Monopoly, and here's another handful of games that are really awesome that I think you should play. So that's the confidence that I have in some of those awards.
So do you find it more valuable that a game has won an award or word of mouth or like a reviewer or something like that? Does that make a difference to you?
That's a big loaded question because there are some reviewers that I think my opinion really changes over time as I play games. If I had to just give an answer, yes. The award does matter and it does carry weight.
Yeah, and for me, I think it does because it's a wider, it's not a single person.
Yeah.
You know, I can have you or another friend say, oh, you got to try this game out. Okay, you know, and I'm certainly going to try it out if they think I would like it, but certainly I have to be playing enough games with those people for them to have a sense of what they think I would like in the first place.
Yeah.
But because these awards are vetted by so many different people, you get kind of that groupthink that the errant opinions filter out.
Yeah, that's
a
good point.
And so you can say, yes, a consensus thinks that this is a strong game. You may not like it, but a lot of people do. And, you know, you are going to know whether you're on the fringes of that or not.
Right. For our family weight games, I'd say yes. Some of the heavier games that aren't necessarily game schooler approved, but games that you and I still like to play, that's where I put weight into certain reviewers.
Yeah.
And when I hear somebody talk about a game and get genuinely excited, I may be tempted to just go ahead and pre-order that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's interesting, too, because people like, I think of reviewers, this is a little bit off topic, but there's that thing of, I already made the decision. Now I want to watch a review to justify my decision.
Your sale,
You know, there's people that do that. But there's something to be said, too, about if there's somebody that you watch a bunch of their reviews and you don't like any of the games that they recommend.
Time to find a different reviewer.
Well, I'm going to say that can be just as valuable.
Oh.
Because if they say that they really like something, you're like, all right, now I know I need to stay away from this.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't like all of the things that you like, it's almost just as valuable as somebody that likes all the stuff that you do. In reverse, which I think is kind of an interesting concept.
So for our educators that are out there, if we're saying go check out the Spiel des Jahres and the Kinderspiel, they could just Google that and find it, and easy to find those lists, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the Golden Geek, Board Game Geek Awards, the Origin Awards. I think anything when you're looking at categories, you know, every reviewer and content creator that's out there is going to have their top games of the year, things like that. But that's always going to just be one person. You know, early next year, you and I are going to have our top 10 games of 2021 that we played. It's like, that's just me and you.
Right.
You know,
right.
But when you have these awards,
and there's thousands of people.
Yeah. Or 100 people making, you know, putting their input into it, you get that filtered result that I think our educators can bank on and say, okay, it's winning by consensus as family game of the year or best card game, that type of thing, that holds a little bit more weight than just an individual reviewer or anything we would say, you know? So hopefully that, you know, clarifies. I know there's a lot of stuff and we're at the point of the year where everyone's releasing their top of the year and their favorite games, all those top lists are coming out right now. And so I wanted to kind of put out the idea of, what are some of the major awards that come out every year, and how can you filter through that to figure out a system that's going to help you winnow those games down? So that is the Board Game Awards. Let's talk about the high five bang for your buck games. If you're anything like us, you're constantly on the hunt for new games to try out. This week's High Five includes a top five list of family-friendly, bang-for-your-buck games. So in this list, I thought about games that were... I felt like there was way more in the box for what you paid. Yep. I didn't necessarily put a, well, it's anything under $5 or it's under $10. I put what I'm paying for.
I can't believe I got this much game for this much money.
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
And we didn't even talk about the definition, but that's how I defined it as well. So I'm glad we sync up there.
All right. I've got a couple of honorable mentions. We'll see if they pop up on your list.
Same. I have two. We'll see
all
if
right.
they
So what do you got number five, Michael?
Number five is the 2021 release Summer Camp by Phil Walker Harding, published by Buffalo Games. It was featured all the way back in episode 31 of the Game Schooler podcast. And is currently, today, if you were to buy it, $24.99 at Target. I have it at number five because there's also a complexity of 1.94 out of 5, 5 being incredibly difficult and I wouldn't understand it, 1 being like bingo or patty cake, and I still wouldn't be able to teach it. But a very, very easy game to learn and play. Also great variability because there are different decks mm-hmm. in the box, and that's where this one makes my list. I've played this game several times, even after we reviewed it and talked about it. It's one that I think will always be in my collection. And for $24.99, I just think there's a lot of game there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good pick. My number five, and the reason this, I feel like this game could be one of the best of the amount of content in the game for what you pay for it. But it's lower on my list just because I feel like it can be harder to teach and requires a specific group, and that is the Crew Quest for Planet 9, which is running between $11 and $15. And there's, what, 60 missions?
52.
52 missions that you can play through this game, different combinations. And like I said, the only reason it's towards the bottom of the list is because it's a trick-taking game, and that's got its own teaching
three-player minimum,
you know, which we've talked about in the past. But the fact that you get 52 different game setups in a game that can cost as little as $11.
Game of the year.
Is too. Crazy.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, great. So that is my number five.
Man, I walked right by that when I was putting the list together, kicking myself a little bit, but I have other good ones. Number four for me. Marvel United 2020 release. This is the standard version, not the Kickstarter that will take up an entire room in your house that Doug has. The designers are Andrea Chiravicio and Eric M. Lang. This was published by CMON. The complexity is 1.84 out of 5. And this very podcast launched with this game. It was our recommended game of the week back in episode one. I'm not going to speak for you, but we both love this game. And I know you have also... I don't paint miniatures, folks. And I'm not giving Doug a hard time here. It's just I am color deficient, color blind, however you want to phrase it. I'm not good with colors. And Doug is a fantastic painter. And this game comes with miniatures that you're able to paint right out the box. And not only that, but the number of villains that are included. And I'm just talking about the base game here. It's a cooperative game where you are moving around the table trying to defeat the bad guys. You get to play as Iron Man or you get to play as Spider-Man or Hulk. Captain America, just great, great Marvel characters. I think you can tell from the enthusiasm in my voice. I love this game. It's a great game. And for all of $20 to $30, you can find this game in that range. So that's my number four, Marvel United.
All right. My number four was Michael's number five, is Summer Camp. And I just think the variability on this one with those different decks that you can choose to play with. There's the board layout, the way that you've got a board. You've got all these decks. You've got the snack tokens. Everything that fits in there, I feel like you're getting a lot of game for $25. Is the card quality is not, you know, as good as some other deck builders, but for what you're doing with it, it works.
It does.
You know, and to be honest, most other publishers, when a game with this many components and variability would be a $50 MSRP game.
Typically,
and the fact that it's selling for $25 at Target, right now it's a Target exclusive. I don't think that'll always be the case, but $25 and the amount of game you get in here is pretty good.
Yeah, and it talk about a game schooler gem, right? Yeah. The game is so well balanced. We tried to break the game when we were testing it, and it's a good one. All right, am I up for three?
Yep, what do you got, number three?
Number three, I have Parks 2019 release. Henry Autobahn is the designer, 2.16 out of 5. It was featured in episode 8 of the Game Schooler podcast and is currently $44 on Game Nerds. Doug is sitting over there laughing at me, and I can't tell why. There's so much in this box. Is it because it comes up on every high five or what?
No, to me, I feel like this is a great game production, but I feel like I'm getting a $44 game, $50 game. Like, I don't think that there's extra in it.
Like, if
this game was $30, I'd be 100% on board.
I think I got the game for $29, Doug, back when I bought it, but I think I bought it from you, and so that's why I got a great deal on it. I just think there's a lot of game in a little box. The game comes with game trays in it. This was one of the first games that I ever played that had game trays in it that wasn't a Kickstarter exclusive or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The cards, the art, and it just happens to be one of my favorite games that I own. So I'm going to keep it on my list,
although you can.
It may not even make Doug's honorable mention.
Oh, no.
Parks.
No, that's a good one for a lot of game, small package.
Yeah, a lot of bang for the
But not for the buck.
A lot of bang for the box.
A lot of bang for the real estate. All right, my number three is a newer one, very new, Happy City. What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
The going rate for this is $12 to $15. This is a little city.
Fantastic game.
Little city building game, and it's got these special buildings in it, and there's probably 50 special buildings, and you play with, you know, 4 to 5 a game.
Yeah.
So, like, the amount of variability in there, I felt like I'm playing a bigger game than something that just came in a box with cards in it.
Yeah.
So that is my number three, Happy City, published 2021.
Can I change my number three? Because I just thought of a different game that we played a few weeks ago. No, I'm not going to do that.
I got a lot of them. This was a hard list.
It is a hard list. Number two is, I'm not going to say it's a game that Doug doesn't like particularly, but it's a game that's in my collection and my family loves it. It's called Clip Cut Parks, 2019 release, Sean Graham and Scott Huntington. This is from Renegade Game Studios. The complexity is 1.25 out of 5. Today only, and probably tomorrow, it's $17.47 on Game Nerds right now. It can be taught and learned in under 5 minutes. It's a great family game that includes 4 scissors. So the game, for under $20, you get 4 scissors, and then you have these little park cards that you are trying to complete, but you are cutting into this sheet of paper to try to get the combinations to fall onto the cards correctly. I understand that's a terrible description, and I met my expectations because I was like, I don't know how to describe this game.
It's almost worth it just for the scissors.
Yeah. Well, but cutting the card, the cool thing about it is if you can't use them on your card, the rules tell you to crinkle them up, and that's a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, who's ever wasted the most paper is the loser. Good one. Good one there. My next two are going to be kind of a tandem, but I view them in the same category, but there is no doubt about it in my mind. Number two, I have Pandemic Hot Zone, North America. This is running $16 to $20 right now, and it has not been higher than that.
Wow.
And you get a very full pandemic experience in a small package and a low price point. I mean, I know we just got done with Black Friday and Christmas and holiday shopping and things like that. And some of these games like Ticket to Ride and Seven Wonders and Catan and Pandemic really go low.
Yeah.
And you can get maybe the full game for $20 on some of these. But this one is always that.
Interesting.
When it's not a holiday. And I think what you're getting out of it for $16 is a huge value that you can get all year long. It's not just on Black Friday. So that is Pandemic Hot Zone North America.
Did your kids like that? Did you play that with
Yeah, with I played that with Emily, yeah. Hmm. And I felt like it was very easy to get into and approachable, that next level, that step up.
Yeah, you know? That was a must for me with the list. I need to be able to teach it. I need to have that feeling that this was fun. It wasn't work.
Yeah.
Are you going with your number one, or am I going? How are we doing this?
No, I can go one. My number one is Ticket to Ride New York, which is also running $15 to $20. And it's the same thing. I feel like I'm playing a full board game.
Yeah.
That I'm
in 15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes for $15 to $20. And I feel like a game that is on par with something that should be costing 30 or 40.
No,
you know, I've played games that cost that much that have less in the box. So those are my two.
I'm going to get beat up on my number one a little bit here. Your games are all dice, on 15, 20.
Is it Dice Throne?
It is not. My number one is Disney Villainous from 2018. Prospero Hall design team. Ravensburger published it. 2.44 out of 5, so it is definitely the most complex on my list by far. Today it's $31.97 on Game Nerds, and it is featured in episode 4 of this podcast. We also have a fantastic skill builder for free to help you teach this game. It's my number one because when you get this game, you are getting an entire universe and system. There are so many variations of Villainous. It is so dang fun. The base game, the one that I chose here for this list, has 6 villains in it, so you can play 2 to 6 characters. But there are also other quote-unquote expansion games that can be standalone games themselves. So yeah. That's where you can get into the Villainous universe for oftentimes under $20, but MSRP $24.99. I feel like you get so much out of that. To me, I equate that as going to the movies with my family. And this is, I'm stealing your metaphor here, Doug, to try to prove my point. But this is a game with a ton of replayability that we've just gotten a lot of good out of. So
yeah. No, it's a great choice. What do you got honorable mention?
I have two. Sushi Go.
I put Sushi Go Party on
okay.
there.
Okay, yeah. I felt guilty putting too many Phil Walker Hardings. Everyone knows I'm already in the fan club. And I have Power Failure.
Yep, I thought that would be on your list, actually.
I really struggled with where to put it, where not to put it. I think just because we've hyped it up so much lately, and I worry about the long-term availability a little bit, but in terms of how much you get for $15 in the game, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I put Sushi Go Party, which is running like 18, and the same for Forbidden Island, which is running 18.
I thought about that as well.
You know, and so you're looking at it, and Sushi Go Party, Forbidden Island, Happy City on my list are all Game Right. Game Right,
yeah.
Here's one I'm just thinking of stuff off the top of my head I left out. Outfoxed is a Game Right game.
You love that game, don't you?
Great cooperative game for kids, and it usually runs like $15.
Yeah.
Full game board, great components. I had Kim Joy's Magic Bakery.
That's where I was going to go. That's what I was going to change with Parks on my list earlier. That's an outstanding game.
16. I think it's a little bit hard to get right now, which is why I didn't put it on my list, but it'll come back. And that's running $16. I saw Back to the Future, Back in Time. Usually runs about $20.
Yeah, I got that for $16 a couple weeks before we
were going to review it. So that's a huge, huge.
I thought about
a lot of game in a box, and then the Horrified. Some of those Ravensburger games are really, you know, you can catch those on sales and a ton of game in there. So
here's our high five. I brought 10, and Doug brought 15 to the party today.
Yeah,
but isn't that a good thing?
Yes.
I mean, really, we just covered about 20 games. Where there's not buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
It's, I'm so glad, and I can play this again, and I can introduce this to new people, and I could take this to the library and play it and not be looked at like a weirdo.
Well, when you can have a 45-minute, you know, half hour to 45-minute experience, and then everybody has a good time, and you can say, guess what? It's $15.
Yeah.
It's like, that's less than Culver's.
Yeah.
You know, for... And anymore, you know, so you can have one meal or you can have a game that you can play repeatedly. It's kind of crazy.
People outside the Midwestern United States who don't know about Culver's, Doug, what are we going to do?
I don't know. They can
have to
put it in their Google machine and look up Culver's and expand your horizons.
Yeah,
that's my my advice. All right. So before we go, reminder to subscribe to the podcast, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Give us a review on our podcast on any of the platforms.
Five star.
If you think we've earned it.
Five star.
Michael demands five stars, no less. And so without further ado, I want to thank you so much for spending the last hour or so with us. We really appreciate it. Have a happy holidays. Thank you so much for listening.
And the last year with us. This is 1 year. 1 year later. Now get out there and start game schooling.
Technically, I think the next episode will come out before the new year.
No, but this is our one-year anniversary, man. Episode 52, or 52 weeks in a year. We've been doing this for 1 year.
There you go. It's kind of hard when you dream, dream after, shine goodbye.